Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. I am finally home. I've been back almost 3 days now, and I'm tired. This show, I don't know how many of you get a chance to see our promo each week. I was late getting it out because I was traveling Thursday, parts of Wednesday, the whole nine yards, and trying to get it out. We didn't manage to do that, I think, until late Friday. If you saw the promo, what I wanted you to get from the promo was that this show, as you read by the title, is a continuation of several hours that we've devoted to what is happening, what has happened, what will happen to United Opt Out, the premier resistance force going on our side of the war. The operative sentence or phrase there was that we'll try and do the best I can do to bring some clarification and understanding to what is happening, what has happened, what is happening, and what maybe will happen going forward. Also, this show was originally planned to have 2 to 3 guests, people who I thought had real historical insight to the war, the opt-out movement, what has taken place over the last few weeks, and et cetera. Some of the people that I invited never got back to me, and that was, I don't know what to make of that, because I know they got my invitation. Others said yes, and then slowly said, well, maybe not, because I think it's a hot button issue, and different sides of the argument have, I don't know, split people to you're in one camp or you're in another camp, and people didn't want to say something that may offend people on one side of the line versus another. So I said I understood, which I do. And no, they didn't want to possibly offend anyone and what have you. So I said I would do the show because I do that all the time. I offend people all the time. So, hey, this is nothing new for me. Now, the show maybe will only be an hour and it won't be a 2-hour show. It could possibly go longer, but I'm not planning on it. I want to set the stage for this. If you heard the music, as this particular piece of music that we use to introduce the show is very, very apropos to today, in that teachers, many of the responses to what is happening with United Opt Out has come from teachers, and in the last week, some parents, but in the last week, things have gotten really nasty, and it's like two sides of a war with people being in different camps and et cetera. And that part of the theme was that, you know, teachers, you know, you got to teach the future, to teach the kids who represent our future, and you need to pay attention to the paradigm, both in that song and in this show's paradigm. Let me remind you what our paradigm is. We seek to bring awareness where maybe awareness doesn't exist or the awareness is ill-informed. We seek to bring some clarity to the awareness and hopefully move people from not knowing to a position of being critically aware. And that's the operative term there, being critically aware. Not just aware, but being truly, truly aware in a big sense as well as a narrow sense. Then the second part, as you already know, is understanding. And the three or so levels of understanding, getting to critical understanding. Those two set the stage for probably the most important, I won't say probably, the most important, and that is critical emotional engagement. Those three set the stage for critical, hopefully positive social action by individuals or by groups. What I have witnessed this week and parts of last week is that people have jumped over the critical awareness, jumped over critical understanding, and have gone directly to critical emotional engagement. That's dangerous, folks. Because if you don't know, if you're not totally aware of what's going on, if you don't understand, and you jump to the emotional engagement, you'll get what we are getting now. You're getting people who are turning this into good versus evil, turning this into one person is a saint, one person is a devil, and they are spewing, I want to say hateful, and sometimes even racist comments. And these are coming from what I believe is the emotional engagement step, jumping all the way over, getting a critical awareness and a critical understanding. And I want people to hear me and hear me loud and hear me clear. That's dangerous. And what I'm going to try and do today is with the knowledge and information that I have gathered over the last almost month since this situation erupted, try and bring some clarity, if I can, and some understanding. Nothing more, nothing less. And I also believe it's more than necessary for me to say what I have said in the past as late as or as recent as last week and the week before that and the week before that. As many of you know, I have a very close personal friendship, family-style relationship with several of the people who were the original opt-outs, original in the sense that most recent original opt-out founders and admins, leaders, and et cetera. And that I still maintain those relationships, specifically Peggy and Seresta and I form what we call the fugitive family. I'm still part of that family. I hope that if nothing else, the three of us will see each other as family still. Maybe even if there is a split between some of us, but I'm not in the split. Okay. And I want that to be fully understood because it's critical to me that you understand that. I'm also very, very good close friends with Dr. Mona McDermott and with Ruth Rodriguez. Those two ladies hosted me in my first road trip. We were friends before, we became closer friends, and we remain friends. I have not talked to all the friends that I have in the United Opt-Out leadership position. Some people are new that I met last February in Philly. But those that I just mentioned, they're my friends. And when I either talk to them or we message each other, whatever, I've always started with the following. You are my friend or you are my family. Regardless of what is happening, regardless to how it happened, and et cetera, you're still my friends or my family until you tell me otherwise. So do I have a bias? Yes, my bias is I don't want to see my friendship and my family break up. I hope this is temporary. I doubt it. I think it's permanent. But I'm still hoping that it can come back together. And with that in mind, I do have, I think, some insights that most people don't have. And I'm going to make an attempt here to try and start identifying and connecting some dots for the purpose of trying to bring clarity and understanding. I'm limited to some extent because some of the things that I know, I came confidentially, and I won't break confidence, but I'll try and do the best I can because of that leap that many people have made to the emotional engagement step. And if you guys have been reading the post, you know it has gotten nasty. All right, let's go. My understanding is that the SOS, Save Our School March, that took place in Washington not too long ago, that in the planning stage for that march, when various groups came together and started to plan what the march was going to be about, what it was trying to accomplish, and et cetera. And this was nothing new. United Opt Out came out of an early, I think it was 2012, Save Our School March. There were other groups that have come after Save Our School got started and started doing their thing. So these groups came together and they started planning. When you try and do a conference on a large scale in a major metropolitan city, and especially someplace like Washington, D.C., it's costly. It's expensive. And when you go out and ask the public to contribute via by Indiegogo or whatever, you're gambling, because a lot of times the public, they'll talk a good talk, but they certainly hell won't walk it in terms of putting their money where their mouth is. So faced with that, my understanding was that a discussion was had about seeking support from the two teachers' union, NEA, AFT. That issue became a hot button contested issue with a lot of people saying, yes, let's reach out to those organizations, and others saying, no way in hell. No way in hell because of what AFT and NEAs have done over the last 5-10 years in terms of supporting many of the individuals and groups that are seeking to destroy public education. They're supporting them in terms of, quote, wanting to get a seat at the table and compromising and avoiding conflict when, in fact, they should have been fighting their asses off trying to protect public education, public schools, students and teachers and community. And so there was, I'm putting this together, the genesis of where we are today. Apparently, when the majority of the people involved in this decision-making decided to reach out for the unions, and the unions came back with, yes, you know, financial support, some people just could not accept that. And as they continue to move forward, there was decisions that I will not participate, I will not go to Washington, others saying, gotta go, others saying you got to have the union involvement and et cetera and et cetera. Well, when the event took place, my further understanding is that Dr. Horn, Jim Horn, who's been on the War Report many, many times, came out with one of his posts where he identified MPE, Badass Teachers Association, Save Our Schools, and at the very end, he said, United Opt Out, as being organizations that have been co-opted. I saw it, you saw it, and I hit the roof on this. I did not know what he was talking about. I didn't know. To me, it was an impossibility that opt-out would have been co-opted. The other group, a long time ago, they were co-opted, in my opinion. And I've said it 100 times. I said I'm also persona non grata in those areas. I don't give a shit, the whole nine yards. At that point, I didn't really know what to do. I trust and respect Dr. Horn's research, his analysis, his conclusions, and et cetera. But he was talking about United Opt Out. He was talking about my friends, my family, and I didn't know what to do, how to deal with it. I decided not to reach out to anyone in that organization, because I either had to talk to Dr. Horn directly or wait until they reached out to me, if they felt it was important enough to do that, since I have this close relationship with many of the people in the organization. Well, when Horn came out with that, the reaction among teachers and parents, the ed community, was kind of fast and furious. People, I don't even know how to begin to try and summarize it in terms of other people's thoughts. But I think to some extent they sort of looked at it the way I did, in terms of I didn't want to believe it. I couldn't believe it, because if I did believe it, what was it saying about my friends, my family, and people that I would put my left arm, right leg on the chopping block and say that these people would die screaming before they would sell out, compromise their integrity, and sell out to the movement. That's exactly how I felt. And so hence, I had cognitive dissonance. I had this information that didn't fit with my conception of reality. And as you know from other shows, and we talk about cognitive dissonance, when we have dissonance, we have to do something to bring back a balance. Either change our behavior, change our belief, or abandon beliefs and adopt a new set of beliefs that's consistent with our behavior. So that's the dilemma I was in, and I think most of everyone else was in that same dilemma. Well, finally, I did start to reach out, and I did start to hear from other people, well, specifically within the United Opt Out movement. I was given assurances from people who knew what was going on, people were involved, that no way in hell was opt out being co-opted by the union, by Broad, the Waltons, the Gates, you name it. I'm traveling, I'm on the road, I'm getting bits and pieces. Time goes by. And matter of fact, when I was in Detroit when this all came about, up in Lansing, Michigan, at the Capitol, and I was with a group of teachers and parents and community organizers and et cetera, we were there protesting the governor's pushing through a new bill that would divide Detroit public schools into two districts, one being a new district that would have no debt and then one would be the old district that had almost $1 billion worth of debt that was actually created by the state itself. But anyway, we were there. So I'm sitting in the auditorium, and two women are sitting in front of me, and one woman sitting next to me. And the three women were having a conversation, and they were talking about Peggy Robinson, who had sort of like disappeared from the scene, and people wanted to know what was happening, and they were concerned. And the woman who was sitting next to me said to the women, "Well, we need to ask James. He and Peggy are really close friends, and United opt out." So the three of these women are looking at me, and yes, I had talked to Peggy by that particular time, and I knew what was happening in terms of why she hadn't been blogging, posting, and et cetera. And all I could say to them was that she's coming back. When I said coming back again, we're talking about back to the blog and what have you, and that some things had happened, and she had to devote her attention and time to dealing with those things, but she was okay. Right after that, Peggy drops the bombshell of, "I resigned from teaching, I resigned from United Opt Out, and we are right back into what the hell is happening, and the cognitive dissonance, all this stuff is happening, not just to me, to everyone." After that, Jim Horn again comes out with more information about why he believed United Opt Out had been co-opted by the unions. Now I think people are beginning to say, maybe there is something to this being compromised, the integrity being trampled on, and what have you. Peggy's not saying anything. The people who are going to be what I now call the new United Opt Out, they're not saying anything, and as a result, people are filling in with their own illusions, delusions, what have you, because we all wanted to know. We all needed to know, and I'll get to why we needed to know a little later on. But so you have this void, and so everyone is asking themselves, asking each other, well, what the F is going on? And so start making up things. Some of it reasonable speculation, others way out there. Then we all find out that not only did Peggy resign from United Opt Out, but so did four other people, for a total of five of the organizers, the administrators, the creators, and sustainers of the opt-out, United Opt-Out, had left. Now, I didn't know any of that for a long time. And that caught me totally off guard in terms of, you have five of the eight all resigning, leaving three. And then as you start looking at it, you can see a divide here. Five people who left opt out, white. The three people who remain, women of color. People started speculating that race and possibly racism had a lot to do with this. I rejected that, although I'm looking at this divide and saying, duh, you got five white people over here, and you got three women of color over here. This is a split, not down gender line, not down class line, but it appears it's a split down racial line. But I know these people, and there is no way that racism could have anything to do with this. Now, that was me rejecting that. Could I have been wrong? Yes. Do I think I was wrong then? No. Do I think I was wrong now? Hell no. And so now we have more pressure for people to start trying to fill in the void here in terms of figuring out what's happening and basically looking at blame. First time I use the word blame, because now blame has come into the picture. United Opt Out people, the two sides, they are not talking about it with the stance of trying to take the high road, not pointing fingers, not calling out individuals. They want to take the high road. And the more they stood by this high road stance, which I agree with and understand, the more the public was searching for an answer and searching for a villain in all this. And I think the more race started to intrude its ugly head. And just for an aside, if you guys have been reading the post on Facebook and others this past week and parts of last week, you know it has gotten downright nasty, ugly, to the point where Seresta Smith, to some extent, Ruth Rodriguez, have all come out and felt the need to defend themselves individually in terms of their integrity, as well as their going forward with what I'm calling the new United Opt Out organization. There have been exchanges back and forth between people who, again, who are basically has sort of like, and these are my terms, folks, has boiled down to canonizing Peggy and villainizing Seresta. Just that clear. That Seresta Smith, being the voice and face of United Opt Out from its very beginning, along with Peggy, who has been the most visible, most vocal person, that the split was caused by a rift between those two, and that it's racial. What has happened this week just demonstrate this in spades. I hate to use that term because that could be considered a racial term. But anyway, so during this week, I have been contacted by several individuals wanting to know, could I shed any more light on this? Because my relationship with many of the principals here, and I think it was just yesterday, someone contacted me and wanted to know whether or not anyone from the two camps would be on the show, that you could not get a clear understanding of what has happened and why without hearing directly from either one or both camps, and I'm calling them camps right now. And my reply was no. I have put out an invitation to both sides. That's a standing invitation to both sides, that when they're ready to talk, they have the microphone. They have the platform. And to date, I did the same thing today. I re-established my invitation by saying that today's show was not the time and the place for anyone from Opt Out or from the past parts of Opt Out to be on this show. But I'm open to them coming on as early as next week. And to that extent, Seresta has indicated that she and maybe a couple of the other new opt-out members would gladly come on the show next week. So I've extended that same offer again to Peggy and will members of those people who left the organization to see whether or not they would like to come on either the second hour next week or the following week or whenever they are ready, if ever, to come on and talk about it from their individual perspective and experience. So there we are in terms of the big picture of what's going on. Back to some of the details here. As I said earlier, when you do a big organization, you're an organization, you want to put on a big event in a major city, it costs money. I understand that the issue of accepting union money, union participation, was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, here. Not just in D.C. for the Save Our Schools rally, but also when it was learned that Seresta Smith and the three women who remain under the opt-out label agreed to put on a sort of like forum in Houston, Texas, this October, wherein civil rights, human rights organizations who have shown tremendous support for the corporate reformers, the neoliberal agenda, Machiavellian agenda, to come to Houston and have face-to-face with the purpose of trying to determine whether or not these organizations, these venerable organizations who have decades, multiple decades of being true civil rights, human rights organizations, to see whether or not they don't understand what is really going on, and hence their support for example, standardized testing is a civil right that is being denied black and minority children when they opt out. And when opt out, opt out state level, local level, all hold their kids back, they are violating their children's civil rights. Bullshit. But anyway, the idea, as it explained to me, is that have these people there, enter into the dialogue and see whether or not you can make them aware, understand, and hopefully change their position. If not, so be it. And I wanted to use another word, and you know what that word was, too. So, I also understand that the local teachers union invited Seresta and the others to come down, help organize this event, and to contribute some funds towards making this happen. I further understand that this invitation came about last fall and maybe even preceded the Save Our Schools March on Washington, especially the event itself. It may even preceded the planning for it. So that going to Houston was something that was planned, and the people there requested, invited, asked for certain individuals' participation, and the individuals visited there. They assessed the situation, assessed the local president, and decided that that person was on the right side of our side of the war, and that working with him was not a sellout, if you want to call it, not being co-opted, and certainly not crushing their integrity. But there was a perception of You're working with the union. You're working with organizations that have come out against us, organizations who take money from Gates, the Waltons, Broads, maybe who support some of the legislation that have come out of Alex that have found its way on the books in many states, that this was clear, clear evidence that people have been co-opted and that this was it. Now, I can see where people would, quote, jump to the conclusion, because there's some reality there, but there's also some, I think, based upon what, again, I've learned, some possible, a lot of misconception. And that the situation is, I'm kind of almost like lost for words, but the situation has gotten so far out of hand that I don't even know if it's possible to ever reconcile the individuals and to create a real atmosphere where people will understand what happened, why, and how. And I'm hoping that those of you who are listening today, if you trust me, like many of you have in the past, that you will begin to maybe rethink what you think you already know, and reevaluate the conclusions that you've drawn already. Because as I think I said in the very, very first show that I did on this issue, is that we don't know what's going on. Now, the significance of all of this, and this factors in, I think, to why so many people are so concerned, upset, pissed off, is this. United Opt Out introduced opt out option to the country. It was there, it was on the books. Most people didn't know about it. Seresta, I understand, was one of the first people to know about it. She opted her daughter out long time ago, and when that came out and United Opt Out came together around the fact that there was this thing called opt out, and then they started doing what is essential our paradigm here, trying to make people aware of this option and make people understand, and then helping people being able to execute opt out by reading the state regulations and the federal regulation and creating forms that people can fill out or just sign and turn in to opt out their kids, and et cetera. Opt out became our most valuable, most efficient, proficient weapon on our side of the war. There have been other organizations trying to do, quote, their thing. And I've even said this a couple years ago when Peggy was on the show, that in my view, there were only, at that time, I can tell you when it was now. It was May 2014. During that month of May, an organization called Journey for Justice filed 3 civil rights complaints at the Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education, claiming discrimination in representing Chicago, New Orleans, and New Jersey. On a show with Peggy and Seresta and the woman from Florida who had just, let me get this together now, who had just refused to give standardized tests, I think, to either a kindergarten class or first grade. She became a sensation, and she was on the show. And I said on that show that of all the individuals and organizations that were trying to mount a resistance, United Opt Out and Journey for Justice were the two most effective organizations we had. And I went on to say that United Opt Out basically was seeking to drive a stake through the heart of the Machiavellian agenda. They were going after privatization and using opting out as a way to thwart the long-term goal of trying to privatize public education. And as you know, I always say, all of humanity and the planet. I think the ed community have come to see opt out, be it at the state level, the city level, the community level, as being, I don't know, our shield. And that any threat to opt out, the movement, and the leaders of the opt-out movement is a threat to our survival. And this is the emotional engagement part that I'm referring to. So that people are afraid now. What's going to happen to us if opt-out disappears? The other organizations haven't been anywhere near as effective as the opt-out movement. And I've said this either last week or the week before last. Opt-out was the only organization, either at the state, city, national level, that was discussed last spring before the reauthorization of the ESEA, student achieved now, and by the White House, the Department of Education, the Senate, the Congress, Governor's Mansion, state legislatures, down to school boards. No other organization, MPE, SOS, you name it, was mentioned by all of those entities. Opt-out puts fear in the hearts and the minds of almost all of our enemies. And to see that that entity may be gone is frightening. And I think people are frightened to the point where this viciousness, this nastiness that has been displayed this week is a direct byproduct of that. And it's almost like Donald Trump and him playing on fear and rousing people's emotion in order to, quote, propel his candidacy and hopefully get himself elected. I think we're in that state, too, in terms of education, that we are scared shitless because our number one shield may have been cracked. And as a result, we're afraid. My take, you may agree, you may disagree, but I think that is what is really driving a lot of the nastiness that I refer to over and over again. But here's something to me that's even more of a concern, and that is, since opt-out got started, a little bit here, a little bit there, getting more people involved, growing larger and what have you, there have been a plethora of individuals and organizations representing billions of dollars, really billions of dollars, coming after opt-out. Call this outside forces, from the president to the secretary of education, to governors, to mayors, you name it. All of these external forces have tried to destroy, dismantle opt-out. They've come after Peggy, they've come after Seresta, they've come after, you name it, all the other opt-out people on the local level. They've come after teachers who support opt-out. They've come after parents. They've come after the students. They've come after anyone and everyone that they could find that support opt-out. And they have not been able to crush the opt-out movement. External forces and all their weapons have not been able to crush. In fact, opt-out has been growing, and the state of New York is a prime example of opt-out growth. From a very few people, the first year they were pushing opt-out to more the next year, and then all of a sudden it's whopping 250,000, I think 2014, and this past spring, 2015, and then this past spring, possibly over 300,000 families opting out. My point is the external forces could not crush opt-out. Here is the bottom line. The internal friction, the internal dynamics seemingly was able to do what none of the external forces were able to do. I'll say it again. The internal dynamics between the eight individuals who were the heart and soul of the opt-out movement, who withstood the barrage of the most powerful people on the fucking planet, couldn't destroy them. It was the dynamics between them that succeeded where the external forces couldn't. That, to me, is a tragedy. That the dynamics between eight people would end up crushing the opt-out principles and possibly the movement that they spawned. And if that's the case, that's a fucking tragedy, folks. Now, I said a lot, and there's still some more to be said here. I don't know whether or not what I'm calling the new opt-out movement by the three principals that stayed together and kept the name opt-out, whether or not their vision, their mission will be such that the public will resonate with it and public will get behind it, or whether or not it will die. I don't know whether or not the five people who left opt-out will ever come back together in their own new form or individually, and if so, how successful they will be. I can't even speculate on that. And that, too, is frightening and a fucking tragedy. Hopeful that the new opt-out will come up with a vision, if they don't already have one, or that they have one and they will articulate it, and they will get some support. They'll get past what is now being the vilification of the three people who make up the leadership of the new opt-out, although there are two new members who have joined the new opt-out, so they have five that I know of now. So I don't know. If I were to speculate today, this moment, I would say they're not going to make it. And I'll say why. You'll come back to race again. The vast majority of teachers in this country are white. Of that group, the vast, super vast majority are white females. It is the white teachers their support of their unions, their individual support for organizations and individuals who are waging a resistance war. Without them, we have very, very small chance of surviving, period. If they decide not to support the new opt-out entity for ideological or race issue, then it falls to whether or not that new organization can get community support. If they can get some community support in terms of teachers and public education supporters in large numbers, they may have a chance. They will not get money that the teacher organizations, like the unions and et cetera, and the teachers themselves who contribute to various campaigns, various resistance efforts, unless, again, they become really and truly co-opted, and then you get the money from AFT, NEA, from Broad, and the like. But then you know what that would mean. He who, you know, the golden rule, he who has the gold makes the rules. If you take their money, you're going to have to take their agenda. So either way, we're dead. Now, if Peggy and Morna and Tim and Mike and I think it's Rosemary, Roseanne, if they come back together and a new entity or two or three of them come back, would they have a chance to resurrect the influence that the old United opt-out grew to? I would think they would have a better chance for the same reason that I just mentioned, in that 80%, maybe even more now, of the national teaching force, white men and women, and of that group, 80% are white females. And I will bet you that would play a significant role in what happens going forward. Sad to say, but that will happen. And I'm going to cite Buffalo as part of the reason why I'm saying what I'm saying here. Three trips to Buffalo, and here's from the very beginning to getting on the plane, coming back just a few days ago, a reality. Buffalo, a city now of maybe 700,000, the second largest city in New York, 80% of the student public school population are students of color, with the majority of those being black students. 80% of the teaching force, white women and men, a complete reversal of statistics. There is friction, a lot of friction, between the black community and the white teaching force. A huge number, if not super vast majority, of the teaching force in Buffalo don't live in Buffalo. They live in the suburbs surrounding Buffalo. The people who send their kids to school there in Buffalo are being told by charter groups. There's a couple statewide charter groups there who are trying to take over the school district there and other places, that these white teachers don't care about the black students, and that they should get rid of these white teachers, and also bring in more charter schools who care about the kids. Yes, they care, like, yeah, okay. While I was there many, many times, there are factions in Buffalo, groups who are pushing this idea that white teachers should be made to move back into the city, and if they don't, they should not be allowed to teach in Buffalo public schools. In other words, you need to live in the city in order to work in the city. You can't work in the city and not live in the city. You can't get your paycheck, take that money, and disperse it throughout the white suburbs as opposed to dispersing it in the inner city and supporting the city's revival and et cetera. And there's this divide. I've talked to the white teachers, I've talked to the black parents. There is a divide. And, of course, you know where the divide is, who's supporting whom. And I believe this dynamic is what's working here in the United Opt-Out and things that I've said earlier. So going forward, I think that this could become part and parcel of whether or not we see the new United Opt-Out succeed or fail, a new organization, a new effort on the part of the five people who left United Opt-Out, and whether or not they can succeed because the vast majority of teachers will identify with them because of race. This is frightening to me. And I don't know what is going to happen. You know, my big picture analysis, my connecting the dots, I really don't know at this point. Well, we are coming to the end of my time. If there are people who want to call in, add to the conversation, now is the time to do it. I was hoping that there would be some call-in because of the many inquiries that I had this week about what's going on and the expression of opinion and position, as I sort of like alluded to. So if there are people who want to add to this conversation, now is the time. And if not, then I'm only going to do 1 hour today. And next week, I'll do 2 hours. And I think the week after that, I'll do 2 hours. And then we'll be back to the one-hour format going forward. So if no call-ins, then I'm going to say thank you and have a good Sunday. See you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.